Tonight we're going to be covering Joshua chapters 18 through 19, but not every verse, and we will not read every verse, but I'm going to begin by reading the first 10 verses of Joshua chapter 18. Now the whole congregation of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of meeting there, and the land was subdued before them. But there remained among the children of Israel seven tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. Then Joshua said to the children of Israel, "How long will you neglect to go and possess the land which Yahweh, God of your fathers, has given you? Pick out from among you three men for each tribe, and I will send them. They shall rise and go through the land, survey it according to their inheritance, and come back to me. And they shall divide it into seven parts. Judah shall remain in their territory on the south, and the house of Joseph shall remain in their territory on the north. You shall therefore survey the land in seven parts and bring the survey here to me, that I may cast lots for you here before Yahweh our God. But the Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of Yahweh is their inheritance. And Gad, Reuben, and half the tribe of Manasseh have received their inheritance beyond the Jordan on the east, which Moses the servant of Yahweh gave them." Then the men arose to go away, and Joshua charged those who went to survey the land, saying, "Go, walk through the land, survey it, and come back to me, that I may cast lots for you here before Yahweh in Shiloh." So the men went, passed through the land, and wrote the survey in a book in seven parts by cities. And they came to Joshua at the camp in Shiloh. Then Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before Yahweh, and there Joshua divided the land to the children of Israel according to their divisions. And then what follows in these chapters are the distribution of the land, the allotments of the land to the tribe of Benjamin, Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, and Dan. But I'm going to pick up reading in Joshua chapter 19, beginning at verse 49. "When they had made an end of dividing the land as an inheritance according to their borders, the children of Israel gave an inheritance among them to Joshua the son of Nun. According to the word of Yahweh, they gave him the city which he asked for, Timnath-Serah, in the mountains of Ephraim. And he built the city and dwelt in it. These were the inheritances which Eleazar the priest, Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel divided as an inheritance by lot in Shiloh before Yahweh, at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So they made an end of dividing the country." This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated. Well, thus far in recent chapters, we have learned about the distribution of land allotments to the tribes east of the Jordan River. That was the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh. And to a few of the tribes west of the Jordan River, Judah, Ephraim, and the other half tribe of Manasseh. Chapter 18 records the distribution of land, chapters 18 and 19, to the remaining seven tribes, once again mentioning that the Levites received no land inheritance. As has been our practice, we're not going to examine all the verses in these chapters. Most touch on the borders of the various tribal allotments and the cities within them. And the final picture can be seen on the map on the back of your bulletin. And we may refer to this a few times, but just a reference for us. Our focus is going to be on the opening and closing verses of these chapters that I've just read, within which we will trace a few themes. We're going to have a four-part outline, and they're all in the phrase of from something to something. The first is from Gilgal to Shiloh in chapter 18, verse 1. From laxity to action, chapter 18, verses 2 through 10. Then from Shiloh to Shiloh, I'll have a couple of verses there. And finally, from Caleb to Joshua. We'll give those verses as we go. So from Gilgal to Shiloh, from laxity to action, from Shiloh to Shiloh, from Caleb to Joshua. We begin with from Gilgal to Shiloh. Chapter 18 begins, "Now the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of meeting there." I don't know about you, but I hate moving. In our 17 years of marriage, Allegra and I, with our family growing along the way, have lived in 5 different homes. That averages out to a move about every 3.5 years, though that statistic is a bit misleading since the first and most recent moves were local and they weren't very distant. Nevertheless, moving to a new home is a major undertaking filled with frustration that is only offset when you finally get settled in and begin to enjoy your new place of residence. Now, moving was a different experience for the Israelites in the days of Joshua. They couldn't exactly phone up 3 nomads in a chariot, you know, to help them make their move. They had spent 40 years constantly on the move in the wilderness prior to entering into the promised land. During their wilderness wanderings, they repeatedly had to set up their camp by tribes with the tabernacle, the mobile sanctuary, in the center of their formation. And they would stay in one place until the Lord told them it was time to move on, and which time they had to strike their camp, set out, and then when the Lord brought them to a new place, do it all over again. That constant moving about has now been left behind as they have come to the land of Canaan, the land of promise. Now, since crossing the Jordan River, the central camp has been at Gilgal, which is about 2 miles northeast of Jericho. This is wrong on your map, and I looked into that this week. I was very discouraged to find that this is wrong. Gilgal is about 2 miles northeast of Jericho. It looks here that Jericho is 2 miles northeast of northwest of Gilgal. Don't use this if you're ever lost in the Middle East. It's not going to help you if you're trying to get between those two towns. I found other maps, but none of them copied very well. So just understand, minor discrepancy there. Gilgal is where Israel first encamped after crossing the Jordan. It's where the treaty was drawn up with the Gibeonites in chapter 9. It was where Joshua began dividing the land in chapter 14. Gilgal has been the central headquarters through the initial stages of the conquest. But now the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of meeting there. Now you can look at that on your map, and you can see where that would be in relation. If you move Gilgal up about 2 miles, you can see the relation to Shiloh. Shiloh is about 10 miles northeast of Bethel and about 30 miles north of Jerusalem. Overall, it's somewhat centrally located in the land. It's within the borders of Ephraim, which is Joshua's own tribe. Israel made the move from Gilgal to Shiloh, and it would be the last big move of Israel's sanctuary center until the time of David, when it was moved to Jerusalem. Now, as we've seen in other aspects of Joshua, this move to Shiloh was in fulfillment of an earlier prophetic promise. I would encourage you to turn in your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 12, and we'll read that earlier promise. Deuteronomy chapter 12. I'm going to read the first 14 verses and pause every once in a while to comment on that. These are the statutes and judgments which you shall be careful to observe in the land which Yahweh, God of your fathers, is giving you to possess all the days that you live on earth. So first of all, we see this is given a while ago, but it is anticipating the time they're in now, the time they're in the land. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations which you shall dispossess serve their gods, on the high mountains and on the hills and under every green tree. And you shall destroy their altars, break their sacred pillars, and burn their wooden images with fire. You shall cut down the carved images of their gods and destroy their names from that place. You shall not worship Yahweh your God with such things. So the Lord was not going to be interested in syncretism. You know, syncretism is where you sort of bring two things together to create something new. He didn't want them to go into the land and do what they had done with the golden calf, which said, well, we're worshiping Yahweh, we're just doing it through this calf. No, they were to destroy all the remnants of the places of Canaanite worship because they were not in any way to mix his worship with that of the inhabitants of the land. We read on in verse 5, but you shall seek the place where Yahweh your God chooses out of all your tribes to put his name for his dwelling place, and there you shall go. And so he tells them, he's going to direct them to a specific place, and that is a place where he's going to put his name. It's going to be his special place of dwelling among them. There you shall take your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, your heave offerings of your hand, your vowed offerings, your free will offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. And there you shall eat before Yahweh your God, and you shall rejoice in all to which you have put your hand, you and your households, in which Yahweh your God has blessed you. And that list of sacrifices are all outlined in great detail in the book of Leviticus. So God has already given them their book of worship. He's telling them he's going to one day lead them to a place where he will place his name so that they can enact this worship on a regular basis. In verse 8, you shall not at all do as we are doing here today, every man doing whatever is right in his own eyes. For as yet you have not come to the rest and the inheritance which Yahweh your God is giving you. But when you cross over the Jordan and dwell in the land which Yahweh your God is giving you to inherit, and he gives you rest from all your enemies round about so that you dwell in safety, then there will be the place where Yahweh your God chooses to make his name abide. And a beautiful picture there. That when they come to the land, it's their inheritance. It's a land of rest, a land of rest from their enemies, when they will have the freedom to worship the Lord in the place he chooses. There you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the heave offerings of your hand, and all your choice offerings which you vow to Yahweh. And you shall rejoice before Yahweh your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite who is within your gates, since he has no portion nor inheritance with you. Take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in every place that you see, but in the place which Yahweh chooses, in one of your tribes. There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command. So he's very much stressing at the end there, you're just not to do those offerings wherever you want. No, I'm going to tell you the place, and there's going to be a central sanctuary. It's going to be in the territory of one of the tribes, but all of the tribes are going to have their worship there. And so Shiloh is the answer to this prophecy. And so we know a number of things that are to be true about it. It's in distinction, in contradistinction from Canaanite worship and Canaanite places and practices of worship. It's to be the place for the prescribed sacrificial worship of God and for rejoicing in Yahweh's presence. That might anticipate some of the feasts and the festivals. It's to be a place of security, of rest from enemies. And again, it's the place where Yahweh puts his name, verse 5, chooses to make his name abide, verse 11. Much later, the prophet Jeremiah says this in Jeremiah 7:12, "But go now to my place," this is Yahweh through Jeremiah, "go now to my place, which was in Shiloh, where I set my name at first." And so Shiloh is very significant in the history of Israel as that place, the first settled place for the gathered worship of God's people. And though the tabernacle still involves tent and curtain structures, it's no longer going to be a mobile sanctuary. In Shiloh, it becomes a settled place of worship for Israel for several hundred years. It is the home of the Ark of the Covenant in the most holy place and the special place of Yahweh's presence in their midst. So there has been this move from Gilgal to Shiloh. But next we want to consider from laxity to action. Laxity, children, means laziness. Note the second half of chapter 18 of Joshua, verse 1. "And the land was subdued before them." Now, that doesn't mean that there were no Canaanites left in the land. We've already seen that that is not the case. You remember that Caleb chose that difficult place to go so that he could go drive out the giants that were in the land. And the sin of some of the tribes was their failure to drive out the inhabitants in their portion. But what verse 1 tells us is that Yahweh had provided substantial victory to Israel such that, as we shall see, they are able safely to send representatives throughout the Canaanite region. Of course, the central sanctuary's move to Shiloh did not mean the settlement of the land was complete. Verse 2, but there remained among the children of Israel seven tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. Now, we may think this is a simple statement of fact, since not all the tribes have been told of their allotments in the previous chapters, but Joshua seems to see something more sinister at work here. For we read on in verse 3, then Joshua said to the children of Israel, how long will you neglect to go and possess the land which Yahweh, God of your fathers, has given you? Now, this is in the form of a question, but it really seems to be an accusation on the part of Joshua against the remaining tribes. The root meaning of the word translated neglect in verse 3 is to become slack, to quit working. It seems these tribes were in no rush to give up their nomadic ways and act on God's promises by taking their portion of the land. They have become too lax, and Joshua wants to prod them into action. And he has a plan to do so. We pick up reading in verse 4. Pick out from among you three men for each tribe, and I will send them. They shall rise and go through the land, survey it according to their inheritance, and come back to me. And they shall divide it into seven parts. Judah shall remain in their territory on the south, and the house of Joseph shall remain in their territory on the north. You shall therefore survey the land in seven parts and bring the survey here to me, that I may cast lots for you here before Yahweh our God. But the Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of Yahweh is their inheritance. And Gad, Reuben, and half the tribe of Manasseh have received their inheritance beyond the Jordan on the east, which Moses, the servant of Yahweh, gave them. So the basic plan is to send out a party of 21 surveyors, three from each of these remaining seven tribes, to map out the land, dividing it into seven regions. And they are to bring their survey back to Joshua in Shiloh, where he will cast lots for them before Yahweh our God. Well, let's pause and note a few things here. In verse 3, Joshua spoke of Yahweh, God of your fathers. In verse 6, he speaks of Yahweh our God. And Joshua wants them to remember that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of their fathers, is their God as well. As Yahweh did great exploits for their fathers in the days of old, so he stands ready to do great exploits for them. And this is something we need to remember as well. We read in our Bibles all the time about God's great faithfulness to his people in Old Testament and New Testament times, but sometimes we struggle to believe in his continued faithfulness to us today. Yet God never changes, and we serve the same God they did. The Lord, the God of their fathers, the patriarchs, the God of Joshua in his day, is our God as well. And we should remember this and cling to and act upon the basis of God's promises. Secondly, once again, there is an emphasis on God's sovereignty in the distribution of the land to the various tribes. As we remarked before, this spares any bickering or accusations that Joshua was playing favorites. It's done by Joshua casting lots in the presence of Yahweh at the central sanctuary in Shiloh. At the end of chapter 19, we find that Eleazar, the priest, was involved as well, that it was done at the temple at the door of the tabernacle itself. Nevertheless, the fact of God's sovereignty does not take away Israel's responsibility. We see throughout Scripture that these things go hand in hand, divine sovereignty and human responsibility. They still had to step out in faith and conduct the survey. They and we should never use God's sovereignty as an excuse for spiritual laziness. Note, Joshua's cry is not, "Let go and let God." It is rather, God has given you the land, now go and take it. And the first step for these tribes is going to be conducting this survey. And then even though the focus is on the seven remaining tribes and their allotments, Joshua mentions all the other tribes when he's speaking to them as well. He speaks in verse 5 of Judah and the house of Joseph. Remember, the house of Joseph was divided between the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. In verse 7, he speaks of the tribes on the other side of the Jordan, Gad and Reuben and the other half tribe of Manasseh. He also mentions the tribe of the Levites who do not get land themselves but are going to be distributed throughout the land. But it's interesting, at this place, he says, the Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of Yahweh is their inheritance. As the other tribes were inheriting land, they were inheriting the privilege of being the priesthood. And what all this mentioning of the tribes does is it reflects Joshua's concern for the unity of Israel. Even as each took their land, they were being reminded to remember all the other tribes. Commentator Ralph Davis applies this point. Christian believers can profit from this perspective. We always face the temptation of thinking that we are elite rather than elect, of thinking that, after all, our own particular Christian ghetto is swankier than the others, or of simply losing sight of the fact that other believers share the same Father's wealth. The New Testament is adamant about this, because out of his fullness we all have received even grace on top of grace, John 1:16. For by one Spirit we all were baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all have been given one Spirit to drink, 1 Corinthians 12:13. But to each one of us, grace was given in line with the measure of Christ's gift, Ephesians 4:7. The Scriptures are not denying Christian diversity, only rebuking Christian snobbery. All God's people matter to him. Each one is his heir. Now, verses 8 through 10 record Joshua reiterating the command to the chosen surveyors who proceed to carry out their assigned task. And they do that and they bring the survey back to Joshua at Shiloh, where he casts lots to divide the land between the remaining tribes. And the rest of chapter 18 and chapter 19 give details about the land allotments to the tribes of Benjamin, Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, and Dan. We're not going to review these details. You can read it on your own if you wish. But again, you can look at the map on the back of your bulletin and you'll see the big picture of how these tribal inheritances were divided. And at the conclusion of chapter 19, all the tribes now have received their allotments. And we should not skip over this fact, for it shows God's faithfulness in the details to his promises to Israel, to each and every tribe. Just as he said, each tribe now had an inheritance in the land where Abraham had once walked in faith and anticipation based on the promises that God was giving to him. As we've noted before, the banner over all these chapters could be, "Great is thy faithfulness." Well, that brings us to two final points. The first one I'm calling "From Shiloh to Shiloh." And these final two points deal with what I call two sets of bookmarks within this portion of the book of Joshua. And the first is "From Shiloh to Shiloh." And this is because chapter 18 opens and chapter 19 closes with references to Shiloh. And this literary pattern that we see a number of times in Scripture is something known as an inclusio. It encloses a certain section. It sets off these chapters as something of a self-contained unit. So in chapter 18, verse 1, we read, "Now the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of meeting there." And then we come to the end of this section, chapter 19, verse 51. "These were the inheritances which Eleazar the priest, Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel divided as an inheritance by lot in Shiloh before Yahweh at the door of the temple of meeting, so they made an end of dividing the country." These dual references to Shiloh bind together chapters in 18 and 19 as one story of the distribution of the land to the seven remaining tribes. But they do more than that. They suggest that Yahweh's presence in the land at Shiloh is what is really of the utmost importance. It's even more important than the presence of the tribes in the land. And the tribes are thus called to remember that the heart of their covenantal relationship with the Lord was His presence among them and their privilege and responsibility to worship Him at His place and in His way. We can think of Shiloh as the spiritual capital city of the covenant until the time of David. And then our last point, and it is a similar point, is from Caleb to Joshua. Chapter 19 marks not just the end of the allotment of land to the seven remaining tribes, it marks the conclusion of the narrative of the allotment of land to all the tribes in Israel. And that began back in chapter 14 with an inheritance given not to a tribe, but to an individual, Caleb. In fulfillment of the promise made 45 years earlier at Kadesh Barnea, Caleb got to choose a portion of land for himself and his family. And again, as I've already reminded you, Caleb was true to his old form and faith in choosing a land inhabited by giants, which he would have to drive out. Remember, he and Joshua were the only ones who believed that the Lord could drive the giants out of the land of promise. And the faithlessness of the rest of Israel led them to wander in the wilderness. And Joshua and Caleb are the only ones from that generation who have entered the land. And when they do, Caleb gets a first choice of a place for himself. Well, this beginning of the narrative of a land allotments recalls Caleb's earlier faithfulness in God's promises, and the ending of this larger narrative does the same with Joshua, the other faithful spy who all those years before had set out from and returned to Kadesh Barnea. So we read in Joshua 19, verses 49 to 50, "When they made an end of dividing the land as an inheritance according to their borders, the children of Israel gave an inheritance among them to Joshua, the son of Nun. According to the word of Yahweh, they gave him the city which he asked for, Timnath-Serah, in the mountains of Ephraim. And he built the city and dwelt in it." Now, Joshua was of the tribe of Ephraim, and they've now been given their land, and you can see that on the map. It is north of Dan and Benjamin. It includes Shiloh, and Timnath-Serah, if you just went about due west of Shiloh, about halfway to the sea, that's where you would find Timnath-Serah. Commentator John Currid remarks, "Timnath-Serah is located in the highlands of Ephraim in the southern hills of Samaria. No major city is near it. Aphek lies 13 miles to the northwest, and Bethel is 10 miles to the southeast. The fact that Joshua's inheritance lies so far from the power centers of the day perhaps indicates that his time of leadership is coming to a close. Timnath-Serah may be a retirement village, at least for Joshua." Well, be that as it may, opening and closing the story of the distribution of the land with Caleb and Joshua would ever highlight to all in Israel the way in which God used the faithfulness of but two men when almost the entire nation had fallen into unbelief. They would be celebrated, and hopefully their faith and faithful action would be emulated. Like the Israelites of old, let us remember the faithfulness of our God, who is the same God served by Caleb and Joshua. God doesn't need a majority to do great things in His church or in His world. And we need to remember that, because often we hear such negative things about the world at large, and even such negative things about the church, even the evangelical church. But let's remember Joshua and Caleb and the fact that God doesn't need a majority to do great things in the church or in the world. He is often pleased to bring about His purposes of blessing through a faithful few. If you ever do a study of the history of revivals, you often see that they come as a mighty act of the Spirit in response to just a few people who have dedicated themselves to praying consistently over time for God to act. So may we follow in the footsteps of Joshua and Caleb and be counted among the faithful who commit ourselves in trust to our great God, who has revealed himself to us in the greater Joshua, Jesus Christ.